Well, I guess the lights are back up on the Queen Mary down in Long Beach, right? Earlier tonight, on my way into Coast to Coast, I heard that they were dimming the lights for an hour all over in honor of Earth Night, right? Am I get that right? Earth Night, something like that. The Queen Mary was one of them down in Long Beach, where George Norrie is going to be giving a presentation at a health expo. But I thought of the Queen Mary tonight when I was looking at the website, coasttocoastam.com. Take a look at the photograph of the Queen Mary anomaly in the photo of the day at coasttocoastam.com. Don't know what it is. All I know is I wouldn't want to be on that boat when the lights go out. It's kind of spooky. But then again, it may be nothing compared to what's coming up tonight on Coast to Coast. I am one who takes Hollywood seriously. I take it as a given that Hollywood has proven that past fiction is future fact. And that yesterday's heresies, as it's said, are today's orthodoxies. It shouldn't be surprising that there have been zombie sightings all around the world, even as we see the growth in popular zombie shows on television and in film. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll talk with Glenn, the pizza delivery guy from The Walking Dead. What a great guy Steven Yeun is. And what a fun, interesting twist in his career this show has been. We may even throw the numbers out just because I know there's a lot of Walking Dead fans. And if you want to grab that, you can go to the website at coasttocoastam.com and get the numbers there. But I want you to think seriously about the correlation of the zombie literature, both in print and that which has been on our big screens and on the little ones. And I want you to think about the global reports that have come in after disasters. Haiti, Mexico, Indonesia, countries all throughout Africa. These are just some of the global hotspots for reports of The Walking Dead. Are they hoaxes? Are they fantasies? Is the belief in a reanimated corpse just a vaudeville for the superstitious? Can we really risk being caught unprepared? Professor Daniel Dressner is a professor of international politics at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. He is a well-respected expert in his field and the author of Theories of International Politics and Zombies. And he's our guest next hour on Coast to Coast for the rest of the night. So do whatever you have to do to get out of the way, to be ready for this. It could save your life. It's like hurricane or tsunami or earthquake or, you know, tornado preparedness. You should be thinking now about how we would survive the coming zombie apocalypse. Who will be the losers? Who would be the winners? Who would be the dinners? Next hour on Coast to Coast. But first, Steven Yeun. Well, we might get on a call or two for Steven Yeun if you're a fan of The Walking Dead before the bottom of the hour. Then we'll go open lines until next hour with the theories of international politics and zombies. But I think what is theory for many people is what we see lived out in The Walking Dead. AMC's series is now out on DVD, the first season, getting ready for season two. And it is the best example of how human beings have to adapt to the rigors of anarchy when all the systems have failed. Steven Yeun knows that well in his character as Glenn, the pizza delivery guy. Good evening, Steven.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Understand we're catching you in Vegas tonight.
Yeah, so If you hear an intermittent bass or a woo, that means that's what's happening behind me right now.
Are you there on Walking Dead business, or are you just enjoying the success of the show?
No, it's my cousin, my older cousin's bachelor party. So, I'll do a shout out to Michael Song on a fun bachelor weekend. So
well, okay,
he had a good time.
I saw that movie. Be careful, no stealing tigers. Look out for Mike Tyson.
I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, Stephen, let me ask you, by way of getting into your biography a little bit too, for people that are interested, what is your cousin do for a living?
My cousin, he works for an investment bank.
Yeah. You see, I was talking with this earlier in the week with Steven because he grew up as the first generation in America of South Korean immigrant parents, very focused on success. So what do your brothers do again, Steven?
Well, my brother is an accountant.
Oh, he's an accountant.
Yeah, and a accounting consultant. And all of my cousins pretty much work in some sort of finance or something really spectacular that I had to live up to.
Yeah. So. And before Stephen pursued acting on a limited time basis, you were given a window of 24 months, your mom said, for you to, before you'd have to go either to med school or law school.
That is right. As soon as I told them this is what I wanted to do after I graduated, they kind of gave me a dead stare. And then they said, all right, fine, you got 2 years. Which I'm very thankful for, because I think that's 2 years more than a lot of families would have given.
Well, perhaps. And it's interesting is that you were able to do what a lot of other actors haven't been able to do, which is turn that 2 year period into something very productive. I mean, it's not that you didn't have, you know, good success on stage or clubs or whatever, but for you to go so quickly into such a successful series, that had to give you, I mean, not that's sort of the an actor's dream, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I can only count all that as, you know, some sort of divine intervention. So very blessed. You know, it's been a great year and a half in Hollywood. And, you know, what's funny is my co-star, John Bernthal, who plays Shane, he gives me crap all the time. He starts every sentence before he talks to me. He goes, hey, Steve, must be real tough, man.
Yeah.
And then he goes on a long diatribe about why it's so tough for me.
Right. For you to end up in The Walking Dead, which is obviously it's a, if you pardon the term, it's a runaway hit. And that the show itself is terrific. And the first season is out on DVD and Blu-ray and people ought to get it. If you haven't, it's as good as everybody says it is because it's so character driven. So it's not just you certainly get a lot of the, you know, oogie googie kind of grossy stuff. But that I mean, you have to have that. It's a zombie thing. But it's really the characters that keep it all together.
Right, right. You know, I think that's what made the comic book successful as well. I think Robert did such an amazing job in bringing in people that maybe weren't even fans of the genre, just out of sheer want to read what these people are going through. And it's a very, you know, you don't want to use slice of life because that sounds all jolly, but it's true to people. It's not about how many zombies you can kill in a day, which is some parts of the show, but I think the real fear comes from, you know, what is the person next to you capable of that you didn't think he was before all this happened?
And so, you know, there's a story arc for every character on The Walking Dead. But I was sort of thinking about your career thing here a little bit, too. I was watching the movie Limitless with Bradley Cooper. Have you seen it yet?
I have not seen it, but I would like to.
Good movie. But there's a line in the movie that stuck with me a little bit, and that is he says as he's walking down the sidewalk and he realizes what this new pill has done for him and all the new ways he's been able to access his brain and stuff, is he says there's a period of time when you realize that you've crossed a bridge, when your old life is gone and when you'll never be the same as that as you're, you know, as you head into this new phase of your life. Have you been over that bridge yet?
You know, I try to make that bridge as small and short as possible. Mm. I think there are some things that in the industry you just kind of have to become accustomed to. But, you know, personally for me, I have really good supporting family and a lot of people around me to keep me grounded. And I think, you know, as much as this is so great, personally for me, I'm kind of a nervous guy in general. So
meaning what?
Meaning, you know, any extra added attention that I am not willing or wanting to get at that time is just kind of it makes me feel awkward, you know. So it's a strange feeling, and it's definitely a readjustment, and it's definitely understanding and knowing, you know, what you worked for and what the purpose of it all is, instead of falling into the trap of maybe the whole Hollywood situation.
We're going to get a couple of your fans here, so don't be too nervous. Don't throw up on the phone or anything like that.
they'll be thrown up later.
Yeah. Sure. So that's right. You're at a bachelor party. Yeah. Save your vomit for later when it matters, when everybody's got their cell phone cameras out. Okay. So we've got a couple of people, fans of The Walking Dead, that want to talk with Steven Yeun, known as Glenn, the pizza delivery guy. Let me go back to, though, something you said at the beginning. You said when you told your mom that you wanted to be an actor, you're going to try that after you graduated college, and she gave you kind of a dead stare. Well, that was kind of a good, omen of what might be coming. You spent.
Right. Yeah. You know, I realized as I said that, you know, it was a perfect precursor to how everything panned out.
and on the set to The Walking Dead, I know that there's a lot of really gross, you know, young aspiring actors who are putting in a lot more of that grunt work that you were able to avoid in your rocket, you know, slide to the top. But those actors, you know, they're covered in, you know, with the eyeballs coming out of their head and their skin breaking apart and makeup. And they got to do a whole day shoot dressed up as a zombie, and they have to eat like a zombie during the breaks and stuff. Does it ever get to the point where you can't keep a straight face around all of these people because you've gotten to know them as people, and now here they are walking around going,
I mean, you know, that very well could happen. What's so great is, you know, the background actors that do those roles of zombies are so committed and so talented. There were some that were on after we cut, you know, and it was just a whole situation. I remember I had an instance where they yelled cunt and they kept on chasing me and like, trying to get me, reach me through the fence, and I was like, guys,
hey, God, you're creeping me out now a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and everyone's so great. I think that's what also makes this show so great is everybody is very professional, not to a robotic standpoint, but they all know that in order for this to work, everyone needs to fulfill their role, and everyone brings their A game, and it's awesome.
And if I remember from talking to you earlier in the week, you said you really haven't had any of those awkward fan moments yet where people who are taking your part or their belief in their own zombiness too far yet, right? You haven't?
Right. I mean, I've run into a couple of people who have embodied the whole zombie aspect and refuse to drop it while talking to me. But, you know, it's everybody's been pretty tame, and everyone is just really into the show, so you can't complain ever.
Well, would they drop it if you hit them in the head with a pickaxe? Would they drop it then?
It probably would, and then that would also lead to my arrest.
Maybe. And to your forever legend. You know, I actually was I was at a concert once when Stephen King used to be in a rock band, and he was touring with other writers like Ridley Pearson, who was a friend of mine, and a couple of the other people that were in the band. And they would play these clubs and raise money for different writers' charities. And,
oh, awesome!
Yeah, it was pretty cool. But one night, I just remember this in Nashville, and a woman in the front row, the band was called the Rock Bottom Remainders, and the woman in the front row dipped her fingers in kerosene and then lit them on fire and started kind of clawing at Stephen King up on the stage. And it really freaked him out. It really freaked him out. And he had the song ended and he was right to the bus. He wasn't sticking around for that at all.
So, yeah, there are some very unique people out there. And I think at this point, since I haven't run into too excited people, I'm just going to commend them in general for their tenacity and vigor. So
there
we'll
just
leave that until you see me say otherwise. I'll probably have horror stories in a few.
Well, I'm guessing this. You probably won't be walking around with a red baseball cap very much, do you?
No.
That would just inviting a little trouble. Let's go ahead and grab a couple of people, some fans of yours. Again, we're talking with Steven Yeun. He's in The Walking Dead. Great, series just out now on DVD. You really got to see it. And then we'll go to open lines before we talk the theories of international politics and zombies with Professor Daniel Dresner. First time caller line, Josh is in Austin, Texas, on Coast to Coast for Stephen Yoon. Josh?
Hi, I'm a huge fan of the show. Thanks for taking my call.
Good.
Oh, thanks, Josh.
No problem. My girlfriend also loves The Walking Dead, too. Her and her brother, they love the show. My question is to both of you. I was wondering, do you both believe that there's a possibility that there could actually be a zombie revolution on the Earth? Like, zombies are going to come up out of the graves and just take over?
You know, I personally, I wish I knew. I mean, I've actually nerded out and studied, you know, I looked up online, did all that, you know, the conspiracy theory stuff. And there are some instances of, like, Haitian zombies, I believe, where, you know, voodoo witchcraft or something like that. But it's more of like a, it's not someone that's dead coming back to life, per se, I think. It's just more their consciousness is all messed up. So I think what's more fathomable in the state that we live in is more along the lines of a virus. I think that's why all these new things kind of come out with the idea of a virus. When I think of someone coming out of a grave, I think magic and potions. So
I'll hold my opinion, Josh, till next hour when we get into more of it coming up with Dr. Dresner. But let's go to Darius, who's in Atlanta, otherwise known as the scene of the crime in The Walking Dead. Darius?
How are you doing? Well, I'm actually a scientist. I deal with, like, hazardous materials management. And my question is just as much for your guest as your next guest. And I'm, like, wondering how you would clean everything up and do things, like, after the zombie apocalypse. Like, you know, how do you keep yourself from getting reinfected or keeping the thing keep going? Like, you know, how do you protect yourself if it's, like, viral or just, you know, a shotgun and not getting bitten? But, you know, one of the interesting things about the television show, and I have watched The Walking Dead, is I think the last episode I saw was kind of a cliffhanger where they showed up at, like, the CDC, and this guy was kind of trying to figure out what was going on and try to fix everything.
That is definitely the cliffhanger.
It's kind of like my question is kind of like, what do you do afterwards?
Yeah.
Like, you know, humans are left, zombies are dying, there's a bunch of dying zombies around, and you know, how do you, like, rebuild and keep yourself, you know, keep humanity, keep going after that?
Well, and that may be tipping off too what's coming up in season two. But Steven, a thought on that?
I'm no scientist. I was supposed to be, I suppose, but I let my parents down on that end. But, you know, generally what I would think as a layman would be, you burn all the stuff that's gone. You burn the bodies, and then you just quarantine from there. You know, I think the world has seen its fair share of epidemics that have swept and killed many, but then they always kind of just rise from that.
Sure.
And figure out a way to contain it. I you know, I heard that even Ebola, like, people aren't too worried about it because the way that it spreads is so fast that people could tell immediately in quarantine so quickly. So I don't know. I think there's, like, a million, like, zombie things that go around, like, you know, maybe it couldn't spread as fast as people think it could, or it wouldn't even spread past the small number of people. I have no idea.
Well, here's what I know, is that having lived in Atlanta for a long time, well, the best part for me about watching the Walking Dead is to think that somehow you could get anywhere as fast as you all get there now, because it's like you take it 2 days to get to Buckhead now, just through regular traffic, and it's crazy. You know what? I'm going to do a little midrash between The Walking Dead and My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and say, try Windex on zombies.
Windex, yeah, or just spray the Windex.
Yeah.
Or a lot of Tussin.
Yeah.
Or a lot of Robitussin.
You might need just helicopters full of Windex. You might need that. All right, let's go real quickly. We'll probably get time for one last call here. This is Jeremiah in Idaho for Stephen Yoon from The Walking Dead. The series is now out on DVD and Blu-ray. Jeremiah?
Zombies. How you guys doing?
Doing very well. Jeremiah. Just got a minute for you, so you got to hustle here.
Okay. My question is for, now the character Glenn. What is the future for The Walking Dead series with your character?
You know, what's going on right now is I think it's open knowledge that we're going to head to Herschel's Farm, which is kind of the next destination that was in the book. And, you know, I can't make any promises because, honestly, I really don't know. They just started the writer's room about a month ago. But I have heard rumblings that, you know, if we go to Herschel's Farm, there might be a lady there that could also help me want to live.
How about that? A little hint of romance. A grand,
yep, there might be a little bit.
A grandchild. Your mother would be so happy.
Oh, she'd be thrilled.
Stephen Yeun, The Walking Dead. Thank you so much. Good. I imagine, yeah, there'll be a little bit of The Walking Dead tonight around Las Vegas toward the end of this bachelor party, but have a good, safe time. And it's really good to talk to you. Enjoy talking with
you
again. God bless you. And The Walking Dead out now. Hang on with your zombie thoughts. Theories of international politics and zombies coming up next hour on Coast to Coast with Dr. Daniel Dresner. He'll explain it all. Which governments would survive? Which political systems would thrive? What do we have to be aware of if we want to end up like Glenn, the pizza delivery guy, surviving the next zombie apocalypse on Coast to Coast? This is Ian Punnett. You can tell the tourists in L.A. because we're the ones with the top down, even when it's, you know, 58 degrees. It's a lot more air than where I came from. All right. So anyway, on the West Coast of the Premier Radio Network tonight, taking your calls for open lines from now till the top of the hour. And then theories of international politics and zombies. Daniel Dresner will be coming up and we'll talk about the world of the coming zombie apocalypse. And he will give you a breakdown of who will very likely be the winners, how we would survive, and what serves as our greatest threats. It might not be what you think coming up next hour. In the meantime, open lines, where do you want to take the show? Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Ponett. Do we have one open line? I think we do Skype line, maybe. You can grab that or the international line. Everybody else, we'll get to everybody in order to the top of the hour on Coast to Coast. A little open lines, a little shucking and jiving. Last night was a lot of fun on open lines on Coast to Coast. Let's grab Dennis, who's in St. Louis, east of the Rockies, on Coast to Coast. Dennis?
Oh, hi, Ian. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Glad to have you.
Yeah, I found it pretty interesting that you had that you were covering The Walking Dead.
A great series. Have you seen it?
Oh, yes. I just got the DVD yesterday.
It's excellent. Yes, and on Blu-ray, because I have it on Blu-ray, and I'm watching it on my TV screen, and it just, the crispness of the wounds on the, I mean, it's the resolution, the pixels. Now, on my regular TV viewing, I wasn't catching the great, the true mastery of the makeup artists on The Walking Dead. It's even grosser in Blu-ray. I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, another one that I picked up at the same time was Resident Evil Afterlife.
Oh, yeah, that's great. I like Resident Evil. I like the whole series.
I got all four of those. And I was trying to catch your guest on there. I was going to ask him if there's ever been any comparisons between The Walking Dead and any of George Romero's Living Dead movies.
Well, I think anybody who's followed the genre, you know, you have to go back to Night of the Living Dead or, you know, Day of the Dead or Dawn of the Dead or whatever. And you have to look at the standard that he set for that, the way in which our humanity or our lack thereof is reflected in the way that the characters react to crisis. So I'd be willing to bet you that all of the people that were involved in both the TV series and then the original graphic novel, they're very aware of how when we see ourselves, you know, darkly in a mirror, like, you know, the zombie apocalypse, we have to look at what we are capable of, both positively and negatively, when our survival is on the line.
Oh, that's true, especially in Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
Where everything just kind of broke down.
Well, you look at Night of the Living Dead, for example, and you see that, you know, in the classic George Romero movie, which was shot in a really a low resolution black and white style, right? I mean, he was shooting it on such a budget, and that the story of the people that are in that farmhouse, right? That in a way it plays out as sort of an interesting analogy or a metaphor for how countries might react if the zombie apocalypse were global. Here you have already two different governments, essentially, right? You've got the guy in the basement with his family, and then you have the people upstairs, and they immediately draw a line between the two of them. And so here they are all facing, you know, the hordes of the living dead, and they can't even cooperate within this house.
And you know what? That originally for Day of the Dead, or not the makeup, but the original script that George Romero wanted was to have civilian scientists living underground and have the military above ground, and they would like each train their own zombie army to fight one another. But unfortunately, he didn't have enough budget for that.
Yeah, because apparently all he had was about $180, because that's about all the production value of that movie. But that's also what makes it so exciting. All right, well, very good. Thank you. Appreciate that. Glad you jumped on. And let's go ahead and get to Jamie in Mansfield, Ohio, on Coast to Coast. Open lines. Jamie, where do you want to go?
Hey, thank you for hearing me. I have a question about all this. It's fun to talk about the old movies, and it's really neat to talk about surviving after everything. But has anyone asked the question, could this possibly be a government plot to develop a class of worker bees to reconstruct nations after we go in and take them over? Is there anything that anyone's looked at to say, hey, you know, what's the use for these zombies, and where do they come from?
Well, then I'm just going to ask you to hang on for about 20 minutes until we can get to our guest next hour, because I think he might have an answer to that question. And if I gave you one, it would only be a faint echo of his. So hang on. I think you're going to enjoy the rest of the show, and we'll move on for now with a very good question. Thank you. First time caller line, Melissa is in Camp Pendleton on Coast to Coast.
Hi, Ann, great to talk to you.
And to you.
And so my husband is in Afghanistan right now. He's with the 3-5 Marines.
Oh, gosh.
I know. I get the look all the time. They're like, oh.
Well, I hope you're getting lots of support. I hope you have this to share with other people who are in a similar situation. And I know that there is sort of a unique anxiety to have somebody like that in a theater of war.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, over here on base, the wives, even, you know, a lot of the husbands and wives. I mean, the first week that I moved on base, I got fed by my neighbors, you know.
Yeah,
They really care. There's a good, you know, vibe here on base. We did lose 30 in our deployment, and it's still going on. So.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that cannot be easy. Well, they do a great job. Marines do a fabulous job, and it's tough duty, that's for sure. First in, last out, and there's a lot of pride in that, but it doesn't come without a cost, so thank you.
Hoorah.
Hoorah. Erp, as some people would say.
But I wanted to talk about the zombie apocalypse for a second, just for 1 second.
Sure.
And I wanted to say, I know I'm good because my husband's a Marine, and my father and I have enough ammo and weapons for every apocalypse solution, problem, anything. We can solve it. We're good.
So, well, you know what? Let me throw this at it. Remember, really, I think your greatest asset would be that those very same relationships of which you speak, because it's really much more about cooperation than domination. Because theoretically, I mean, even with all that you have, you know, there's a finite number of bullets, and there may not be a finite number of living dead. And so, you know, already it's still going to come down to cooperation and being able to outsmart what is essentially a walking virus.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's worse than the flu that's here on base right now.
But just barely, probably.
Just barely, because all the kids are snot-nosed right now.
Right.
But my actual question is, with the whole no-fly zone over Libya and everything going on in North Korea, Russia building up its weapons over the last decade, do you feel like a third world war coming on, or am I just paranoid because I'm joining the Navy, and my husband's a Marine.
You're joining the Navy?
Yes.
Wow.
I'm a psychology major, so they'll carry me all the way to my doctorate.
Good.
And I want to help. I want to help my fellow brothers and sisters.
Well, and they'll need you. I know, as you know, since the troop numbers are dwindling, the people that actually do the fighting. There's a bigger emphasis on keeping them in longer, which means there's a bigger stress on their mental capacity. And none of us, even supermen like your husband, I'm sure, everybody needs to be able to decompress with somebody and to be able to get over the experiences that they've had. So, I mean, I commend you in the work you're talking about doing. And we all know people, both men and women, that your husband is serving with and the people you're living with, they need that kind of psychological help. There's no shame in it. And we need more people doing it. So thank you. I think you're doing God's work there. As far as Third World War, no.
No?
No.
Really?
I don't.
Okay. I think I've been hanging out with my dad too much.
Oh, I know. I may be the only kid on the block that doesn't believe that. I know that I'm the stick in the mud in a lot of these open line calls. And I just think we are too into... Our economies are too interdependent. And so we can't continue to thrive. We would have to decide that we all were going to, you know, as a planet, we were going to lower our standard of living and that we were going to go back. We were going to try and turn the clock back on a time before there was, you know, international trade at the level we're doing now, or for that matter, international communication. And you can get online right now and you can talk to somebody in Libya. Right now, and you get online, you can find somebody who's Libyan, and you're talking to me, and you ask them, how are they feeling? I mean, this is at a level that we've never been to before. I'm not saying there won't still be international wars, but we'll never be. I don't believe we'll ever see a World War III, much, you know, like we would have had at one point.
Hopefully my dad's been hearing this, because I've been arguing with him about it for the last, I don't know, year.
Well, his prostate's bothering him or something. I mean, there's got to be. I mean, I know there's lots of cranky old guys out there that believe this, and I hope that, you know, I hope I can still be here, you know, 5 years from now saying, look, it hasn't happened yet, because I know 10 years ago people were telling me World War III was coming then, and I just don't think it's going to happen. So hang in there and cross your fingers and say some prayers, and with all the good work that your husband's doing, maybe we will be able to avoid it. Now, I can't guarantee we won't have a zombie apocalypse. Now, I'm going to say that. But World War III, I think, at least in the way in which we've had them in the past, that won't happen. Could we have an international conflict with another superpower like China? That could happen. But I think the conflicts would still stay somewhat limited. Kyle is in Kent, Ohio, on Coast to Coast. Kyle, you're on a wild card line.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much for taking my call.
Glad to have you.
Mr. Punnett, it's an honor to speak to you. It's the first time I've actually talked with you. So.
Thank you. Glad to have you. Thank you.
I'm a firm believer in, like, alien intelligence, like, or alien contact with, like, ancient peoples.
Sure.
Basically, my question is kind of, like, what are your thoughts on, like kings and pharaohs from Egypt and the Mayans and Aztecs maybe be being abducted by aliens and then given this knowledge about, you know, the Mayan calendar and the building of the Great Pyramids and all their knowledge, you know. I was just wondering what your thoughts are.
Well, you're talking about the pivotal periods in human history, which we cannot yet explain, where there doesn't seem to be an explainable trajectory for how we jumped in our level of understanding of the cosmos or of architecture or of engineering, where just suddenly we didn't have it around the planet and then seemingly magically we did, and everybody had it almost simultaneously. And what does that speak to? You know, I don't know about abduction. Possible. I don't know whether it's alien technology per se. It might be. I think that there's something more interesting to me about some sort of ancient source of wisdom that we don't know of yet. And whether that's alien or not, I don't know. I mean, I certainly wouldn't rule it out. But it could just as easily be somebody who had, you know, a king who had an advisor who just happen to have access to something which we don't to this day, that could explain the higher mathematics and the greater level of understanding of how to move, you know, these giant pieces around that just came out of nowhere. In a generation, the technology that gets skipped in a generation, just for, we go from, you know, from a spork to, you know, a bandsaw, you know, it just, and nobody can quite explain it. It's a fair question to keep wondering. And we will continue to have guests on Coast to Coast that'll look for the evidence of that and to ponder it. Let's see. Kate is in Bend, Oregon on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Kate?
Hey. Ian, I got a kick out of you saying you can tell the tourists in L.A. they got the taps down. I was raised in Southern California, not a native, but lived in the San Fernando Valley, which is a particularly warm area.
Yes, it is.
And my cousin came to visit from Wisconsin one time. I must have been 13 years old, kind of a, you know, touchy age for girls. And I was just so embarrassed because she broke out her shorts. And I don't know, it was maybe 60 degrees or something.
Oh, please. We got shorts on when it's 40, girlfriend. We don't wait till it's even 50 before you'll see people wearing shorts in the upper Midwest.
I was too polite and didn't want to embarrass her, but I was really embarrassed taking her around the neighborhood in her shorts.
Oh, well, we had... You should see the day of the first thaw in the upper Midwest when, whether it's in Wisconsin, as we say, or whether it's, doesn't matter where it is, that you'll see joggers going by in T-shirts and shorts and it's 38 degrees out.
Well, man, I'm in Bend, Oregon now, and I see it here.
There you go.
We snow like every day for weeks, and it will melt into rain as the day goes on. But you get up every morning, there's a little powdered sugar. And man, there are guys in shorts and people on bicycles that it's a wonder they don't freeze. And
yeah, you know, you gotta live every moment. It's you gotta take every chance you can and go out and enjoy the weather while it lasts, because we all know that season doesn't stick around for long. Thanks, Kate. Appreciate that. Let's get to Jeff in Mendocino as we are running out of time on Coast to Coast. Jeff.
Hi, Ian. I hope your caller from Pendleton can do a psychological workup on the politicians who send us into those wars and address the issues of war being antisocial versus negotiation.
Well, you know, you speak of what you talk of right there. You know, that's the kind of the class, if you don't mind me saying this, is sort of the classic liberalism model of international politics, which we'll get to coming up vis-a-vis zombies in just a few minutes.
And question on a food for thought aspect, if vampires sucked the blood out of zombies and zombies tried to eat vampires, would each camp die of malnutrition? Has that movie been made yet?
You know, that's an interesting thought. Well, there's no way vampires would be attracted to zombies, because they need the life force of blood, right?
Right.
And zombies don't have that.
Yeah.
And there's no way that I don't think that zombies would be attracted to vampires, because they're also the undead.
Well, this was the irony of that concept.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I get that. But, you know, it's interesting that you should go that way, because that's one of the things we'll get to coming up, is the fact that the undead never attacks the undead.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, and why I came up with that concept, since you had the mention of zombies earlier.
Sure.
And vampires. And so, you know, if they didn't like the meal and they vomited at a bachelor party, what would that consist of?
Have you ever seen the movie? Yeah, really. Have you ever seen the movie Let the Right One In?
No.
Okay, you should go watch that. You find that very interesting, because it speaks to that a little bit. That was the Swedish version, Let the Right One In, and the American version was Don't let them in. I can't remember. But there's the American version's really good, too, I thought. Lynn is in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, on Coast to Coast, and probably the last call we'll get to before the top of the hour. Lynn?
Hi, Ian. Yeah,
hi.
I just have a question as you being a minister, and
yes,
I wanted your opinion.
Yes, ma'am.
After Judas Iscariot turned in Jesus to the soldiers and he felt sorrowful, and they say he committed suicide. I don't know if he did or not.
Right.
But if he did, and you think, and he was so sorrowful, do you think he went to heaven or hell?
Did he repent? Is it the question?
Yeah.
Did he reflect?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that is a profoundly theological question. And it's the kind of question that people often apply to in terms of Adolf Hitler. Is there a redemptive possibility for any of us? There are people who are facing execution on death row tonight that are wondering that exact question about Judas Iscariot. And so would the act of suicide, such a profound shame for what he had done, would that be enough to be considered redemptive act? Did he actively ask for forgiveness enough? It's another kind of show. We'll have to get to that sometime. But, you know, that right now actually isn't a bad way for us to get into what we've got coming up next. Theories of international politics and zombies. When the dead are reanimated, what will life be like? Dr. Daniel Dresner's next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.